Hello, this is Joy Ray Freeman. The following program was produced and broadcast during 2000. I am a master healer, spiritual warrior, writer, and workshop retreat facilitator. My intent is to assist those who are ready to become whole and productive contributors for creating a better world. Please check out my main website for empowerment and or healing opportunities. Joy, number 2, letter U, .org. Enjoy the program.
This is Joy Ray Freeman, bringing joy to the world. What do you do when you encounter bumps in your road of life? Do you bristle and coil or retreat quietly? Either way, you could be missing a chance to unveil your true self of that moment. Surely, there is a reason if it feels like a bump. The bump itself, whether it's a person or a situation, cannot read our minds, and we sometimes don't see the bigger picture. The best way for you to honor yourself and others is to acknowledge the discomfort or feeling of frustration, both to yourself and to the other part. By doing so in a way that expresses how you feel or think about the incident, in a calm, non-hostile way, you own your reaction and can move on without carrying residue caused by unexpressed energy. If we all keep the energy flowing, there will be fewer dams that break ahead.
Living in oblivion.
I welcome Uranus, the planetary being, who breaks up cloudy crystallizations, an architect of the heavenly scheme, who constructs, rebuilds, and strengthens. How grateful I am to thee for the energies you bring that move upon the astral sea, that Christ may reign as King. Take my thoughts held long and fast, shatter energies of false devotion, purify the patterns of the past, setting my soul light in motion. Radiant flowers show the way, arcing brilliance along the path. Arrange your perfected array to hold the Christ light fast. Jenny was a bright-eyed, pretty 5-year-old girl. One day, when she and her mother were checking out at the grocery store, Jenny saw a plastic pearl necklace priced at $2.50. How she wanted that necklace! And when she asked her mother if she would buy it for her, her mother said, "Well, it is a pretty necklace, but it costs an awful lot of money. I'll tell you what. I'll buy you the necklace, and when we get home, we can make up a list of chores that you can do to pay for the necklace. And don't forget that your birthday grandma just might give you a whole dollar bill." "Okay?" Jenny agreed, and her mother bought the pearl necklace for her. Jenny worked on her chores very hard every day, and sure enough, her grandma gave her a brand new dollar bill for her birthday. Soon Jenny had paid off the pearls. How Jenny loved those pearls! She wore them everywhere, to kindergarten, to bed, and when she went out with her mother to run errands. The only time she didn't wear them was in the shower. Her mother told her that if she got them wet, they would turn her neck green. Now Jenny had a very loving daddy. When Jenny went to bed, he would get up from his favorite chair every night and read Jenny her favorite story. One night, when he finished the story, he said, "Jenny, do you love me?" "Oh, yes, Daddy, you know I love you," the little girl said. "Well then, give me your pearls," he said. "Oh, Daddy, not my pearls," Jenny said. "But you can have Rosie, my favorite doll. Remember her? You gave her to me last year for my birthday. And you can have her tea party outfit too, okay?" "Oh, no, darling, that's okay." Her father brushed her cheek with a kiss, said, "Good night, little one." A week later, her father once again asked Jenny, after her story, "Do you love me?" "Oh, yes, Daddy, you know I love you." "Well then, give me your pearls." "Oh, Daddy, not my pearls. But you can have Ribbons, my toy horse. Do you remember her? She's my favorite. Her hair is so soft, and you can play with it and braid it and everything. You can have Ribbons if you want her," the little girl said to her father. "No, that's okay," her father said, and brushed her cheek again with a kiss. "God bless you, little one. Sweet dreams." Several days later, when Jenny's father came in to read her a story, Jenny was sitting on her bed, and her lips were trembling. "Here, Daddy," she said, and held out her hand. She opened it, and her beloved pearl necklace was inside. She let it slip into her father's hand. With one hand, her father held the plastic pearls, and with the other, he pulled out of his pocket a blue velvet box. Inside the box were real, genuine, beautiful pearls. He had them all along. He was waiting for Jenny to give up the cheap stuff so he could give her the real thing. And so it is with our higher power, Heavenly Source, awaiting the time when we give up the cheap things in our lives so we can receive our beautiful treasure.
Underneath one canopy, and you took took the globe that burns on high, put it far enough to warm my eyes, and you took the earth to trot upon, to realize our time before we're gone. And if this is your best place, why you lay it all to waste? And if this is your safe home, why you break its fragile bones? And if this is your last chance, why you dance with circumstance? And if this is all for real, why pretend you cannot feel? The bluest of them all, put it on a path where water falls. And you took the greenest of the green, put it underneath one canopy. And you took the globe that burns on high, put it far enough to warm my eyes. And you took the earth to trot upon, realize our time before we're gone. And if this is your best place, why you lay it all to waste? And if this is your safe home, why you break its fragile bones? And if this is your last chance, why you dance with circumstance? And if this is all for real, I pretend you cannot feel.
Here's some food for thought. What are your highest ideals, and how are you expressing them in your life? Ask the most important person in your life, what helps you to feel most loved by me? What would you attempt to do if you knew you couldn't fail? What if you could take all the things you hate to do and turn them into something pleasurable? How would your world and your behavior change if you knew everybody around you respects and admires you? How would you go through life if your fears couldn't stop you? What would you do if the improvement of your world would solely rely on your own actions? How would your day pass by if you had promised yourself not to say one dishonest remark for 24 hours? How would your world change if you liked everybody in it? Do you believe that the way you see life is the only actual and indisputable reality?
friend I have known for many years called me one day in great distress. A few months before, she had an accident in which a car ran over her foot. She has had a long, painful recovery with surgery and physical therapy. That day, she was worrying about money. She had no job and was concerned about her mounting bills. She would need a wheelchair for a while yet and couldn't go back to work. "What should I do?" she asked. I could see she needed her faith renewed and was hoping to find the exact words she needed. "Now, dear friend," I said, "don't you believe that when you ask God for help, that someone could just walk up to your door and hand you money?" She laughed and said, "No, I don't believe that for myself. I believe it could happen to you, but not me." Racking my brain for some elegant words to help her, all I could come up with was, "Oh no, don't think like that." Just then she interrupted, "Someone is at my door. Wonder who that could be. I wasn't expecting anyone." She said she would call me later and hung up. A few minutes later, she called back. A lady she didn't know had just knocked on her door, handed her $300, and said that she was asked to deliver the money to her. No one owed her money. It was an anonymous gift. The church group she belongs to knew her situation, and it could have come through them, but still she didn't know who gave her the money. And the lady at the door would not tell her. A few days later, she got $100 unexpectedly from another source. Where did the money come from? "The angels told me years ago, when you make a request, it is none of your business where it comes from or how it manifests."
A lady with a turban on her head steps down into the street. But she had been to see her only son. He was lying in a hospital bed, still trying to get over the war. When the bus pulled away, she stood there, so dignified in the blue smoke, calling all survivors of the visionary school, calling all the witnesses, dying to tell the truth, shaking out the flags of those that justify the rules. Baby, I'm flying in the face of Mr. Blue. Standing on the highway where the midnight shadows fall, walking in the valley where the only way to leave is through the wall. Standing on my love life when the flame is burning down. I'm looking for a way, I'm looking for another way. Early in the morning in the city park, the cans are shining on the beach. A young girl is turning circles in a faded paddle boat. The keeper says she's crazy, she paid me over and over again. And she's out there every day, really alone on the blue water. Standing on the highway where the midnight shadows fall, walking in the valley where the only way to leave is through the wall. Standing up alone like when the flame is burning down. I'm looking for a way, I'm looking for another way. my office down to the cold gray streets below. I keep looking for another reason to hold my face up to the light. You'd think by now it'd be easy and I'd be so close to home. I'm taking cover from the stars falling down from the blue ceiling, calling all survivors of the visionary school, calling all the witnesses dying to tell the truth, shaking out the flags of those that justify the rules. Baby, I'm flying in the face of Mr. Blue.
Statements about the Bible were written by children and have not been retouched or corrected. In the first book of the Bible, Genesis, God got tired of creating the world, so he took the Sabbath off. Noah's wife was called Joan of Arc. The Jews were a proud people, and throughout history, they had trouble with the unsympathetic genitals. Samson slayed the Philistines with the axe of the apostles. The seventh commandment is, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." Moses died before he ever reached Canada. Then Joshua led the Hebrews in the Battle of Jericho. David was a Hebrew king. He fought with the Philistines, a race of people who lived in biblical times. One of David's sons had 300 wives and 700 porcupines. Jesus was born because Mary had an immaculate contraption. The people who followed the Lord were called the 12 decibels. Epistles were the wives of the apostles. A Christian should have only one spouse. This is called monotony.
of addition, the sin of omission, or a look and just what it infers. The truth is elusive, colored by things. Rationalization, revenge, and frustration, the end justifies the means. The lie, the lie. Everybody's got a reason so compelling to justify. The agendas unknown, to flatter and smile and slyly beguile, wearing lies like a beautiful gown. The lies, the lies. Everybody's got a reason so compelling to justify. The truth is undone when a person is driven by fear and ambition and jealousy clouds and infolds. The lie, the lie. Everybody's got a reason so compelling to justify.
Along with his wife, is the owner of Tom's of Maine, the natural personal care products company. In his audio tape, The Soul of Business, he describes how, despite his incredible material success, a big house, a huge boat, a very successful business, he woke up one day at age 43 and realized that he felt disconnected from the company and himself. He considered retiring. Then he decided to go to divinity school to become a minister. There he refound his purpose, coming to see that his ministry was to incorporate into the business practices of Tom's of Maine the values that he believed in deeply, and to help other business people bring soulfulness into their workplaces as well. If you want the habit of gratitude to grace your life, it is essential that you, like Tom Chappell, develop the belief that you are here on earth to fulfill some purpose and that only you can offer that to the world. You are an amazingly rare, totally non-replicable individual with talents and gifts that the world anxiously needs. The more that you experience the truth of your uniqueness and beauty,
the more you will feel gratitude for your particular gifts, and the more you will be able to deliver those gifts. Unfortunately, not many of us were born to parents who nurtured our individuality, honored our gifts, or helped us to recognize our purpose. So, as adults, we may find it difficult to love ourselves in a wholehearted way, a way that fosters a deep and quiet sense of gratitude for ourselves. In The Woman's Book of Spirit, Sue Patton Thole offers the following meditation. It may help to realize the value of gratitude toward ourselves if we were to visualize our heart as a delicate treasure, hand-blown from the rarest ethereal glass, a treasure valuable beyond imagining, fragile, irreplaceable, priceless, and ancient. There is no other like it, infinitely precious, existing before time and after infinity. Both seriously ill occupied the same hospital room. One man was allowed to sit up in his bed for an hour each afternoon to help drain the fluid from his lungs. His bed was next to the room's only window. The other man had to spend all his time flat on his back. The men talked for hours on end. They spoke of their wives and families, their homes, their jobs, their involvement in the military service, where they had both been on vacation. And every afternoon, when the man in the bed by the window would sit up, he would pass the time by describing to his roommate all the things he could see outside the window. The man in the other bed began to live for those one-hour periods where his world would be broadened and enlivened by all the activity and color of the world outside the window. The window overlooked a park with a lovely lake. Ducks and swans played on the water while children sailed their model boats. Young lovers walked arm in arm amidst flowers of every color of the rainbow. Grand old trees graced the landscape, and a fine view of the city could be seen in the distance. As the man by the window described all this in exquisite detail, the man on the other side of the room would close his eyes and imagine the picturesque scene. One warm afternoon, the man by the window described a parade passing by. Although the other man couldn't hear the band, he could see it in his mind's eye as the gentleman by the window portrayed it with descriptive words. Days and weeks passed. One morning, the day nurse arrived to bring water for their baths, only to find the lifeless body of the man by the window, who had died peacefully in his sleep. She was saddened and called the hospital attendants to take the body away. As soon as it seemed appropriate, the other man asked if he could be moved next to the window. The nurse was happy to make the switch, and after making sure he was comfortable, she left him alone. Slowly, painfully, he propped himself up on one elbow to take the first look at the world outside. Finally, he would have the joy of seeing it for himself. He strained to slowly turn to look out the window beside the bed, but it faced a blank wall. The man asked the nurse what could have compelled his deceased roommate, who had described such wonderful things outside his window. The nurse responded that the man was blind and could not even see the wall. She said, "Perhaps he just wanted to encourage you." There is tremendous happiness in making others happy, despite our own situations. Shared grief is half the sorrow, but happiness when shared is doubled. If you want to feel rich, just count all of the things you have that money can't buy. The problems of the world cannot possibly be solved by skeptics or cynics whose horizons are limited by the obvious realities. We need men and women who can dream of things that never were.
in the blue of the night. El azul de la noche. El azul de la noche.
We want our lives to make a real difference, to be of genuine consequence in the world. We know that there is no satisfaction in merely going through the motions, even if those motions make us successful, or even if we have arranged to make those motions pleasant. We want to know we have had some kind of impact on the world. In fact, you and I want to contribute to the quality of life and to make the world a better place. Just wanting that is deep within us, and it's the first step to becoming.
The power. There is tremendous power residing within you. As you become aware of the truth of who you really are, this power will stir and slowly awaken. Getting in touch with your power comes from acknowledging yourself as being at cause in your life. You are the creator, not the created. You, not your neighbor, are responsible for your life. Once you understand this, you will be able to create whatever support you need in life. In our culture, we are often conditioned to feel powerless and helpless. Rather than take responsibility for our lives, we blame outside forces. He did it to me. She did it to me. The world did it to me. But, as Eleanor Roosevelt reminded us, Nobody has the ability to oppress you unless you give them permission. Even when you are surrounded by negativity, you have the power to program your mind to receive only the good. The final step in realizing your power comes when you align your will with the higher will. With the full force of the universe behind you, you can achieve results that transcend your normal limitations. Of course, this power can only be used for the highest good of all concerned. Become a selfless channel for good and let the universe work miracles through you. Until next time, this is Joy Ray Freeman, wishing joy to the world. Thanks for listening.